Okay. All righty. Well, thank you so much. This is a terrifying experience for me always. Anytime I'm going to speak, and it's exciting, also kind of like a roller coaster or Space Mountain or something. I can hardly breathe, so I'm going to ask you to join me in a version of the Serenity Prayer that I've learned. I don't even know where it came from, but it's a different version of the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, courage to change the one I can, and wisdom to know that one is me. Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, being 87 years old, plus a few months, I could talk about what it was like, and then what happened, and then what happened, and then what happened. And I could keep going for 2 days, but I might not have any body left to be listening. So, who knows? Who knew that there's instructions in the big book about how to tell our story? As many years as I first read the big book in probably 1980, and I just saw these instructions. It says, in a general way, in a general way, we tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I thought I was supposed to tell every detail. So I'm not, in a general way, and that's what I'll try to do. They say if all else fails, read the instructions, and the instructions are right here. Okay, so it's a spiritual journey. I thought in the beginning that OA was about food and eating and not eating certain foods and all that kind of stuff. And today, what has been revealed to me is that yes, it's about that, but it's not about that. It's about a spiritual journey. So that's what I'll try to talk about. The only steps that even mention food in an eating disorder or alcoholism or sex or gambling or whatever is step one and step 12. Those are the only ones. And only half of each one of those is about the particular disorder. The other half is about how to live our lives. So it's about learning, for me, an entirely different way of understanding myself, other people, and most of all, my higher power, the God of my not understanding, as I often say. So here's what it was like. I've got note cards, y'all. If I lose the note cards, I'll disappear. Okay, here's what it was like. The beginning of my addiction to the taste of sweetness, I think, began in early infancy. I might have been born with it, I don't know. I do have to use the word sugar. I'm sorry, I know that's against the rules, but I've got to use that one word in telling how I think my addiction to the taste of sweet started. Right after I was born, my mother went into the hospital to be treated for uterine cancer. And my sister and I were left in the care of a bunch of people who didn't know much about taking care of children, I think. But one thing they did know, if I cried, they gave me what was called back in the day a sugar tit. That's very crude, inelegant term, but that name, but that's what it was called. They would put a spoonful of sugar in the middle of a clean white handkerchief, and they would tie it up with thread, I guess, and they would put it in the baby's mouth. This was 1936, way, way before plastic pacifiers for babies. And of course, the baby, I, would quit crying because of that wonderful taste. And I think that's how my addiction to the taste of sweet started. But I think it would have kicked in sooner or later anyway, because I believe it's just a part of me. As I was growing up, we always had dessert at night after the evening meal, but quite often it was just something fruity. It wasn't sugary stuff, really, not very sugary. And I was a child during World War II, and sugar, sorry, I'm not supposed to say that. That sweetening material was rationed. And a lot of other foods were rationed as well during World War II. And so maybe for that reason, or maybe because she knew that too much sweet stuff wasn't, real sweet stuff wasn't good for us, my mother sweetened the iced tea that people from the Deep South kind of live on. That's the liquid that they drink is iced tea. And it was sweetened with saccharin tablets. That's the only kind of artificial sweetener that was around back then. And then later on, diet sodas and other kinds of artificial sweeteners came along. And that's important for me to mention because I've got to come back to it again later when I talk about my recovery. The family that I lived with consisted of mama and daddy and nanny, which was my mother's mother, and my older sister, Betty. Lots of aunts and uncles and cousins, but I wasn't close with most of them. There were a few that were slightly overweight, but there just wasn't a whole bunch of stuff to become overweight on back then. I don't remember ever hearing anybody laugh in our house. Never. I never heard that. They were responsible people. I never heard them yell either. They were mostly kind, but they were distant. Actually, it may be that I was the one who was distant from them. That could very well be the case. We moved to a small town when I was 13 years old, and there still wasn't a lot of sugary stuff available. My mother believed in, quote, willpower. You just don't overeat because you use your willpower. And she had a lot of that, I guess. I don't think there were any other sugar addicts in my group of teenagers. At least nobody was overweight. But then I wasn't overweight back then either. I was definitely an addict. I was definitely addicted, but there just wasn't much of my stuff available. That was the difference. And I did a lot of exercise. We danced. We did physical education, which I hated. And I swam a lot, a lot, a lot in the summertime because I knew that was a way to keep my weight down. And so I did a lot of that. I would sneak one piece of something sweet and homemade that my mother and my grandmother would make. In my teens and my adulthood, I never had what I considered a best friend. Never did. I was the third wheel. This girl and that girl would be best friends, and I was the third wheel. And that was true throughout my developmental years. And I accepted that on some level. I thought that was just the way it was, and that was okay. And I'm mentioning that because that's another part of the way it is now. Sometimes I was lonely, but I had my dog. And the boys tended to like me. And my best friend was the taste of sweet. So that was the way things were for me growing up. And in college, I went off to college, and ate in a family style dining hall, and there still wasn't a lot of highly sugary food available. This was the 1950s. It was a somewhat different world, y'all. Advertising of binge foods was not the same back then as it is now. I met and married husband number one, but the summer before that, I worked in Tampa and I stayed in different people's homes. And of course, they all wanted to be so nice to that sweet young student that was staying with them. And so they all made lots of sugary foods, and I gorged. I binged on those sugary foods that I had never had access to before. And I gained some weight, of course. And somehow that came to my attention. And so then I starved for the next 6 weeks. I ate almost nothing. And I lost the weight and I got into the wedding dress. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Well, marriage number one was a disaster. I knew how to keep house, but I had no idea how to be a wife, a marriage partner, or a parent. And I'll be making living amends for that as long as I live. I had four babies. After baby number one, I started sneaking and lying about my mother-in-law's frozen desserts. We lived with her for a while. And then when she said something about it, I lied and said probably my husband, her beloved son, probably ate it. So that was the end of that. I was the one that ate it. And then after number two, I went to something called Swim and Slim at the YMCA. And you would swim for an hour and then you would exercise for an hour. Well, that took care of baby weight. And then my husband got deferred from the Vietnam War draft as long as he could. He was a student, then he was an intern, then he was a resident, but he finally ran out of being deferred and went into the army. And we lived in Heidelberg, West Germany. So that's where baby number four was born. I think I left out number three there. But anyway, baby number four was born in the army hospital. So I was given the Air Force diet. Woohoo! That worked. That was great. I loved it. I lost the weight and was able to get into one of those cute little German costume dresses. Then we spent 2 years in North Carolina for his last 2 years of training, and I was severely depressed during those 2 years. That was one of the times that I was really glad there was not a gun in the house because I might have used it on myself. I know I must have fixed food during those 2 years, but I don't remember fixing any food. I don't. I can't remember a single thing. I must have fixed school lunches because I know they took school lunches to school. I also had a religious obsession, and that's an important part of my story. I did not know how to relate to anybody except through the religion that I grew up in. I think I really may be on the autism spectrum. I would not be surprised. I never was diagnosed. But for me, my relationships with people were kind of go away, come here, but not too close. Go away, but not too far. Come here, but not too close. So it was come here, go away all the time. I don't think I overate during those 2 years. But then he finished his training. He went into medical practice and we actually made some money. I mean, he actually was getting paid real money and we moved into an actual house. And now I could really indulge, and I did. The kids were in school, so there were school lunches. There was Easter candy, Halloween candy, Christmas candy, 4th of July candy. Everything that happened was an occasion for candy. And I would have to go back to the store two or three times to buy more of it because I would eat it up before the occasion came. And
Chris,
so that happened.
we are at 5 minutes.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So I need to wrap up. And I'm still on the way it was. What happened? What happened? My religious obsession fell apart. I became an atheist for about 10 years. I ran away from home. I divorced that husband, left those children, established a career. I had gone back to school in middle age and became a mental health counselor. Huh, that's a joke, but that's what it was. And my life began to fall apart little bit by little bit. I thought I was on top of things for a long time, but it was falling apart. And so I had learned about 12-step recovery through my job. And I took step three. I did not believe in God. I was an atheist, but I had heard y'all say, I had heard people say, act as if, or fake it till you can make it. And I did. I acted as if, not just put on an act, but I really knew how to act as if because of one woman who lived her program in front of me. So don't ever think somebody's not learning from you. Somebody's learning from your program, whether you know it or not. I learned from her, and I began to work the steps as best I could. And within a year, everything had changed. I had a new job. I had a different car. I had a different home. I had a different husband. I had a different name. It was all changed and different for me. And so now I really did believe in the God of my not understanding. I'm not a religious person still. That didn't return. But I do believe that there is somebody. I don't call it he or she. I don't call it by name, except I call it my BFF, my best friend. I never had a best friend growing up, but I have a best friend now. And my best friend is my higher power, God. My weight, what it's like now, my weight is what it was when I got my first driver's license at age 16 before I began eating compulsively. I have a rough food plan. Some of it's very specific, some of it's very general. But the one thing that is important in my food plan today is that I do not eat anything that provides the taste of sweet. Not artificial, not real, not fake. And that was revealed to me by my higher power that I needed to quit doing that. I did that for 30 years and stayed in relapse recovery, relapse recovery. I don't do that now. And the other most important thing, and I'll wrap up with this, the most important thing I think I can say is that I do have food thoughts from time to time, frequently. And when I have a food thought today, I know to ask my BFF, my higher power, what's going on? And sometimes, forgive me, I'll say, what in the hell is going on? My higher power has a sense of humor and doesn't seem to get mad at me about that. And so sooner or later, I become aware of what it was that was going on that made me want to escape into the taste of sweet. So with that, thanks for letting me share, and I'll wrap up. Thank you, thank you, thank you.